This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with Jeffrey Sado, LSU political scientist in Shreveport, who has been a staunch defender of Governor Bobby Jindal during the past two terms. And Governor Jindal continues to make headlines with his vetoes and also with discussions about the prospect of him entering the U.S. Senate race next year against Mary Landrieu. We'll talk with Jeffrey Sado. Also, Jason Wilson from the Baton Rouge Metro Airport on the latest developments regarding the airport in our community. And we'll hear from Jim Kleinpeter of the Times-Picayune and NOLA.com on this week's induction class at the brand-new Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame in Natchitoches. The headliner this year is Shaquille O'Neal. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your local dial. If you're calling long distance, it's toll-free, 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We're joined by LSU Shreveport political scientist Jeffrey Sado. He's been there at the University in Shreveport for 22 years and is known for his political conservatism. He's been with us before. Good morning again to you, Jeffrey Sado.
Hi.
And belated happy birthday.
No, thanks. Don't know how you found that out, but I'm impressed.
51 years old, 10 years older, 9 years older than Governor Bobby Jindal, 42 years young as the governor who celebrated a birthday earlier this month. A young man in a hurry. What's his next stop? Is he going to run for the U.S. Senate?
Well, I really don't think so. Everything that he's been doing in terms of self-publicity, let's say, has been really aiming towards something you would have to say in the executive branch. A lot of people would think, and probably he might well be thinking this too, the White House, but if that's what he wants to do and that doesn't pan out, then perhaps a cabinet slot. So I think that's where, if he's got any ambitions after this office and on a national level, I think that's really where he's headed. And he's done his legislative bit for a few years, and I think he's really more interested in the executive branch.
Well, if he wants to be president, being in the cabinet's generally not the way to get there.
Yeah, no, that's quite correct. But it may be the consolation prize that he, if you would term it as such, that may be what he would be left with if he doesn't succeed again, assuming that's what he wants to do.
Do you think he has a realistic shot at winning in 2016?
When you say realistic, that also means possible. Yes, he's got there's a possibility of him winning. In terms of whether he's a favorite, no, I'd say there are several people ahead of him in the pecking order. As of right now, things, of course, can change dramatically as they have in other instances for other people in years past. So yes, he's got a chance, he's got a possibility. But as of right. Right this moment, no, I don't think it's a very great possibility.
Well, if he were to run for the Senate next year, he would take office in 2015 as a U.S. Senator. He could run for president in 2016, or he could wait until 2020. He could do a lot of things as a U.S. Senator and have a platform that he would not as a private citizen. If he doesn't have an elective position and he loses his quest for the White House, then he's out of a job and looking for something to do at the age of 44, so or 45. So what happens to determine whether or not he gets in this race? The 64 parish tour is somewhat curious, Dr. Sado.
Yeah, he in order to get into this, some things have already happened that have kind of forced his hand. President Obama not been reelected, and you have Mitt Romney in the White House, who presumably would have gone for a second term. If at that point Jindal wanted to be and was appointed to the cabinet, and that didn't happen, then he, maybe it might have been a better strategy for him to go for the Senate at that point, because from his line of thinking, he'd be there for at least another 3 years and quite possibly seven. So given that time span, unless, as he said before, he would like to come back and run again for governor after sitting out a term, then it would make sense to go to some place like the Senate and incubate there, and then maybe try to move on from there. But with Obama having won re-election, and therefore there will be no Republican incumbent in the White House in 2016, I think he feels more of an imperative that 2016 is the time to go for it. And so, you know, if he, say, he goes, he went for and won the Senate in 2015, and so he gets there, and if a Republican wins in 2016, then we're back to kind of the same set of dynamics. He'd have to spend some time there. And if a Democrat won, you know, to some degree the same thing. So he'd really have to be putting his if he has plans for the White House, he'd really have to be putting them on hold mm-hmm. for quite some time. And the Senate, again, just like the cabinet, maybe a little bit better now, is not the greatest launch pad for that kind of thing. Usually people come pretty straight or not too long after serving as a governor somewhere. So that's why I think he'd probably going I don't think that's why he'd be that interested in the Senate this time around.
But Barack Obama came from the Senate, so there's
And of course, Kerry and McCain also were trying to make that jump directly from the Senate. It's a relatively recent phenomenon, though. The last successful president before Obama was, of course, John Kennedy, coming straight from the Senate. And just about it between that, 1960 and 2004, I'm not even sure there was any nominee that was trying to come directly from the Senate to the White House at that point, or someone who made it that far in the nomination to actually get nominated by a major party. So only recently has that become a better, better launch pad. And so again, though, Jindal, in terms of more personality, I think he's more locked into being in that executive branch kind of position where he pretty much rules the roost, at least in that part of government. He doesn't have to go and negotiate around with many other people to get stuff done. He can more easily take credit, and of course, also makes it easier to apportion blame to him as an executive. So, this is not to say that he wouldn't run in 2015, but at this point, I don't think that's his major focus. And again, things could change, but I think he's really more looking beyond serving in a legislature at this point.
297-5633, if you'd like to engage Jeffrey Satto, who has been a supporter for most of the 6 years of Bobby Jindal in the governor's office. And now there is some speculation that Bobby Jindal might be running against Mary Landrieu. Now, last week, the governor made headlines with his screed in Politico. What was your assessment of the words from the governor in that piece?
Again, pointing towards these national ambitions, and again, probably more oriented to the White House than anything else. There was no real event, so to speak, or even series of events, I guess, that would trigger something like that. It was just did not really address any particular initiatives, national or otherwise, in that. And so just this more general kind of broad, this is my philosophy, this is where I think, the party and government ought to be going kind of thing, which again lends itself towards an indication of national kinds of ambitions. I don't know that it either improved or degraded his particular chances for that kind of ambition.
Well, it really wasn't a scholarly writing. It was in your face, put on your big boy pants, stop the bedwetting, kick around the other guys. Those are words that you might read in Ring magazine, not in Politico. What's gotten into our governor?
Well, I probably just a little reaffirmation for the base out there. In his thinking, the base knows what direction they want to go. They want to know. They know what kind of things ought to be done. And so, really, here this is just an exercise in, all right, well, you know, I'm kind of with you on this. This is kind of what we need to do. These are some of the perhaps where we're getting off track. And so. I want to kind of emotionally pull you, keep you on this track. I think you ought to be going on, and just reminding people that he's there, and while he may have this scholarly reputation, so to speak, as much as any politician can have a scholarly reputation. So while he may have that kind of reputation, that maybe he can rabble rouse at the best of anybody else's out there that may have other Republicans that may have some national ambitions.
John in Lafayette. John, good morning. You're on the air with Jeffrey Satto.
Good morning. I think it would be very smarter politically for Governor General to run against Senator Landrieu. I don't see Governor General's future after being governor as far as national politics unless he does that. She's vulnerable. Mr. Cassidy can't beat her. I think the governor could. In fact, I'm not being facetious here. I think there would be people who would vote for the governor just to get him out of Louisiana. So I think he'd have a good chance to beat her, and I think that's the only way he can go as far as having a great political future.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to what you say there. It does. Having a career, even a somewhat short Senate career, is probably not going to hurt anybody's chances if they aspire for something even higher. And he does have a lot of money, although, of course, that money can't be used in that particular kind of campaign. State law doesn't allow for that. So the fact that Cassidy's in the race kind of tells us two things here. One, Cassidy would not have gotten into it if there was not already some indication coming from Jindal that he was not that particularly interested in it. Now, of course, that could have been months ago, and his mind could have changed since then. But at that time, when Cassidy made his formal announcement, he would not have done that unless Jindal – he wouldn't have done it if Jindal had shown a lot of interest at the race at that time. And then also the fact that Cassidy – has already done fairly well in fundraising. He's done far better at this point than any of Landrieu's opponents in the past at this point. So clearly there's demand out there for him among Republicans, and therefore that demand is not there or not to that extent for Jindal. So when you look at this kind of decision, that if Jindal's thinking about this, if you look at that, look at the dynamics here. He's got to take into account that Cassidy is so far so good, doing well as an opponent, as a Republican opponent, and so that should be something that would discourage him, because he would have to break into that. He'd have to divide that, and so I'm not sure he wants to go in that direction.
Although if he wanted to, he could. As John McGinnis wrote, he could stiff-arm Bill Cassidy pretty easily, I would think. Being the governor is a mighty benefit to a political candidate seeking high office, and there is no higher office in Louisiana than being governor, but Governor Jindal can't run for a third term. And speaking of running for governor, U.S. Senator David Bruce Vitter is apparently considering a race for governor in 2015. He's backing Bill Cassidy, so David Vitter could have a big place in Louisiana politics. We'll talk about it in 90 seconds. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 877-217-5757 is your number. Dr. Jeffrey Satto, LSU political scientist for more than two decades in Shreveport. He is with us, and we're talking right now about politics, and we'll get to some other matters with the professor as we move along in our remaining time with him. 297-5633 if you were dialing locally. And Professor David Vitter is in position if he chooses. He could run for governor. Then he would, if he won, he would appoint his successor to the U.S. Senate. He also is backing heavily Bill Cassidy, has his whole campaign apparatus behind Senator Cassidy, who fired Governor Jindal's former top aide, Timmy Teeple. So it appears that David Vitter is positioned to be quite a player in Louisiana politics if everything unfolds as he apparently is wishing it will.
Sure, and you know, that's kind of relating back to the to what we were just talking about. If that scenario happens, and that's in fact one reason why I'm not so sure that Cassidy would be such a pushover if Jindal ran in 2014. But this means maybe, and I consider this more likely, that Jindal would run in 2015 when if this happens, Vitter then apparently vacates the seat upon a successful election, or 2016, whenever
2016,
it might happen. It depends. I don't know that Vitter would do a Chris Christie and suddenly call an election, but yeah, whenever that would happen. So that, I think that's a little bit more likely. But of course, that is again predicated on Vitter leaving the job and assuming, presumably, the governorship as Jindal's successor, which, in fact, I do consider increasingly likely. And in some ways, that light, if Jindal were to try to go on to the Senate, that in some senses, this is also going against type, because Vitter's never held an executive office of any kind. He's always, in his 20-year or so career, he's gone through a series of legislative positions and seeming to enjoy a maverick status to some extent as a legislator. But you know, maybe he thinks it's time to move on or to do something different, or maybe he has a larger goal of trying to be a mastermind of Republican Party politics in the state of Louisiana. And the governor's position, of course, is the ideal place to try to do that, if that's what you want to do.
Well, and if Bobby Jindal were to run for the Senate and win, remember, he still would have a year left as governor that he could not serve, so that would mean Jay Darden would ascend to the governor's office and would be running as an incumbent governor in 2015, and quite likely would be the favorite. So a lot is at stake if Bobby Jindal runs for the United States Senate. Here's Foster Campbell, I'm sure a man that Professor Satto is familiar with, the public service commissioner from the same area where Professor Satto is perched. And he was on this show yesterday, and here's how he reviewed the governor's essay in Politico.
Some of the stuff is just silly to talk about. Quit bedwetting and put on your big boy pants. I mean, you know, here's a little guy that he's the last person in the world ought to talk about big boy pants.
All right. Your thoughts?
Full disclosure, Foster is a family friend of my in-laws. I've known him for a number of years. So the tenor and tone of his remarks does not surprise me at all. Again, as we were discussing last segment, the article did come across a little against type. As Foster was indicating, Jindal does not present himself as the kind of politician that typically uses phrases such as that, and so it does come off as a little odd. It's quite possible that Jindal didn't write this, believe it or not.
You think?
Believe it or not, yeah. I hear politicians do actually hire speech writers from time to time to do these kinds of things. And so, again, you know, I think the significance of this particular address, you know, he's invited to do this, so he does it. And, again, it's throwing a little encouragement out there for the base, as well as some kind of reminder about what he, the direction he thinks the party ought to keep going, or I don't know, the view of some, maybe alter its direction. You know, also at the same time, the particular phraseology, I think, was there to indicate that he's ready to mix it up if he has to mix it up with some people.
Barry in Mid-City. Good morning, Barry. You're on with Dr. Sato.
Yes, good morning. Good morning, Professor.
Hey.
I'm curious about Senator Landrieu's prospects, and also where is the Democratic Party of Louisiana in terms of the governorship?
Well, to go in reverse order, there's one declared Democratic candidate right now. He's the leader of the House Democrats, John Bel Edwards, declared a few months ago. It's really early in the process to be doing that. You really don't even have formal declaration, so to speak, from anybody else at this point, although a number of people have all but declared in a formal sense. So he's out there, and you know, we'll just have to see if anybody is joining him. There's always rumors of some, quote, more moderate Democrat. Every election period, we seem to get that. And, you know, whether such a candidate is going to manifest, that's another matter. As far as Senator Landrieu's chances, right now she's in some trouble because when you look at some of the indicators of through polling, questions such as if you had to vote today, would you definitely vote or not vote or whatever for Landrieu? You get questions like that. She's, according to historical norms, she's not running very well. She's getting about as many people, in some cases, if not more, saying they would vote not to reelect her than to reelect her on this day. And you know, that leaves the balance of those respondents say, well, maybe we will, maybe we won't. But it's never a good sign when an incumbent doesn't already have locked up a good 40 to 45% of that response set. And she's been around the 35% area, so that's not a good sign. And then just the fact that Cassidy is doing fairly well in fundraising and matching her there. If we look back at her past opponents, they were usually outspent by her anywhere from 2-to-1 to 4-to-1. But if Cassidy can stay with her and spend at that amount, that's an indication that there's a lot more interest in a Cassidy a candidacy, as well as an assessment that he's going to be a quality challenger and that he can beat her. That also is not that good of a sign. So, you know, you look at there's some other polls and other questions about on polls you can also compare to other historical metrics and races elsewhere and all.
All right. All right. I want to get you on a few other topics, at least one other that a listener has posed, who read your essay, Dr. Sato, about how the governor ought to veto the surrogate mother bill. Jenny asks about this, and the governor did exactly what you encouraged him to do, vetoing State Senator Gary Smith's Senate Bill 162. What's your assessment of this?
Well, I'm like the governor, I'm a Catholic, and I think, like him, seriously, do take those matters into consideration on these kinds of public policy issues about what the church says is would be the moral thing to do. And so I think that was in large part driving his decision on this particular bill. And of course the bill without that being a law, that does not prevent these kinds of things from happening. It just merely means that the state that there's no state mechanism to enforce these contracts through the judiciary. So the practice will continue. It just would not have that kind of state protection to it. And so I think in his mind, the fact that this didn't impair those kinds of things from happening, although they remain at risk of not being enforced or falling through, as well as Catholic doctrine on this, I think those are the deciding things in his mind to veto it, and I think they were, in my mind, justifiable.
So you're against surrogate motherhood?
No, I'm against the state regulating it or providing that kind of regulation in that sense. If people, as a Catholic personally, I would not engage in it. However, if other people, couples would want to go that route, that's fine. But again, the state does not have to have that kind of role in that kind of decision.
All right. Well, thank you, Professor Sato. It's good to talk with you again, and let's do it again soon. Appreciate
it.
Take care. 297-5633 is your number. We're joined now by Jason Wilson. He is the Administrative and Development Manager at Baton Rouge Metropolitan Airport. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning. Thank you for being on the show this morning.
Well, I'm here every day. Thank you for being on the show. Well, you've got some small business and more than small, just business plane initiatives going on, and that's your bailiwick. What's going on at the airport regarding business and travel?
Yes, well, as far as business, we're holding our annual Small Business Opportunities Workshop on tomorrow. Registration starts at 8:30 a.m. The program begins at 9 a.m. until 2 p.m. It's a big networking event for all the small businesses in the Baton Rouge and surrounding areas. It's an event that's been designed for all firms pursuing work at the Baton Rouge Airport, whether it be a concession vendor or contractors, designers, and all types of businesses that we reach out to. And as a part of it, we have three different programs, the DBE Design and Construction Program, DBE Concession Program, and we have the SBE Program, which is open to all small businesses. And this year alone, we're looking at a record turnout. Of course, this is our eighth year in the event. We have well over 20 vendors and well over 150 RSVP'd for this program this year. We hope to continue growing with this program and providing opportunities out there to the businesses in our area.
297-5633 is your number. And we're visiting with Jason Wilson, who is the Administrative and Development Manager at Baton Rouge Metropolitan Airport. You've held this position, what, about 11 years?
Almost 12, yes,
almost
sir.
12 years. And our community certainly relies heavily on the airport, as we found out after Katrina, when not only our community but others were using the airport with great aplomb. But how important is it to business and to the community as a whole?
Through grants and bond projects, as you know, airport, we always have construction going on. We always have opportunities for vendors to bid on projects, participate in RFPs and RFQs. That's request for proposals and request for qualifications out there in the business industry. And we like to reach out to those businesses, and that's the purpose of this event, to reach out to all of those small businesses who are the prime hold on America for its tax base. So we have a lot of resources available, to include Small Business Administration, the Mayor's Office, Council, Louisiana DOTD, a wealth of resources that will be available for those small businesses in all aspects of their businesses, by the way.
Charles in Jefferson Parish. Hi, Charles. You're on with Jason Wilson.
Yes, I'm a private pilot, and there is a category of light sport aircraft that is not available for rent here in Baton Rouge. And so I'd like Mr. Wilson to encourage the fixed base operators to purchase aircraft in that category so we can encourage private flying in the area.
Of course. Yes, sir. We will pass that
over. Oop. All right. I think we just lost Mr. Wilson, at least for a moment, and hopefully we will get him back. But thank you for your question, Charles, in Jefferson Parish. And the Baton Rouge Airport is, as I stated, extremely important to the fabric of this community and has thrived, especially during downtimes when Hurricane Katrina slammed us nearly 8 years ago. A lot of people were moving in and out of here from New Orleans and other parts of the state, and it was one of the busiest airports in America. Charles, you or excuse me, Jason, you were in full bloom when I lost you. I wanted you to respond to the question from Charles. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. That's not a problem. We have no problem reaching out to the FBOs and the pilots out there to encourage those additional activities. We will discuss, and feel free to give us a call at 225-355-0333, and we can talk about this a little bit more formal.
All right. What about new airlines? How's it looking?
New airlines. I'm going to turn you over to Mr. Jim Caldwell.
Okay.
He's
well,
going to
give
you that.
I didn't know he was with you, but we got the big guy.
Good morning.
Jim Caldwell, the guy who manages the airport. I had no idea you were obviously within earshot of Jason Wilson, but what about new airlines?
How's I'm in his office. Yes, I'm the marketing and air service development manager. Well, we're always going to various recruitment events several times a year. There are two major events where representatives from airports go and meet with planners from airlines, and it's kind of like speed dating where you have 20 minutes to pitch your story to the airline. And we just returned from one in Atlanta about a month ago, and you know, it's a challenge today because of the consolidation, you know, in the industry with the, you know, the recession and fuel prices spiking. Airlines have become much more disciplined than they historically have been. You know, in the past they focused more on market share, sometimes at the expense of profitability, but now they've been very disciplined in cutting seating capacity. And the mergers, of course, you know, have fewer airlines between American, Delta, United, U.S. Airways, and Southwest. It's about 85% of the seats in the industry now, so there aren't as many opportunities for new airlines, but there are some. We've spoken to a few carriers that are today charter operators that are expressing an interest in getting into scheduled service, and some of our incumbent airlines have talked about adding additional capacity. Delta, for example, has brought in several new larger aircraft. We've got an Airbus A319 jet that has first class and coach that comes in the afternoon, some days a DC-9. They've upgraded the larger regional jets on some of the morning flights, the CRJ-700s that have first class and coach.
Last year, the Baton Rouge Airport reported 826,488 passengers. 39% of those were from Delta, 28% United, 24% on American Eagle, and 9% U.S. Airways. Jim Caldwell, the marketing manager, has seen some airlines come and go. We'll talk with him a few more minutes, and then we'll hear from another Jim, Jim Kleinpeter of NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune on this year's induction class at the brand new Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame in Natchitoches. This year's class is headlined by Shaquille O'Neal and the man who owns most of LSU's passing records, Tommy Hodson, also going in the hall this week. We'll talk about it. Return with Jim Caldwell after this 90-second timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher is producing, and we resume our conversation with Jim Caldwell, the marketing manager for the Baton Rouge Regional Airport. Last year, the Metropolitan Airport had its best year in 4 years with an increase in the number of passengers over 2% in 2012. How's it looking for this year, Jim Caldwell?
So far this year, it's relatively flat. Our first 3 months of the year, our seating capacity was actually down slightly, and more of that has to do with the airlines and retiring the 50-seat regional jets and just aircraft availability issues than our market, because our load factor's been you know, one of the highest in the country at over 83%, the percentage of seats filled. But with April and May, the capacity increased and it improved slightly. So we're hoping the second half of the year is up slightly and we can at least have a modest increase, but it won't be very large.
Well, we look forward to keeping in touch with you, finding out how you're doing out there. And it's, as I stated, a vital part of our existence in this area for anybody who has to get on a plane and get somewhere else. The Baton Rouge is still quite likely the destination of choice, so the destination leading out and leading back in. So thank you, Jim Caldwell.
You're welcome. We always appreciate people checking BTR first.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
We're joined in studio now by Jim Kleinpeter, who is president of the Louisiana Sports Writers Association and will be in Natchitoches along with many of his colleagues this weekend as a new class is inducted at the brand spanking new Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame, of course, has been in existence for many years. And Jim Kleinpeter, this is an event that it's always big, but this year it's really big.
Yes, we've never had our own building, and we didn't just get a building. We've got a beautiful, it's a $23 million facility, state-of-the-art. It's got everything you'd want in a museum, and a lot of people put a lot of hard work into it, and we're very, very proud of it.
Designed by Trey Trahan, I believe, same
Absolutely.
Guy who did Tiger Stadium.
That's right. He's it's really beautiful. I've only seen the mock-ups of it, but it's gonna be really impressive for the people that are there this week.
Well, LSU of course has two inductees going in, and Tommy Hodson and Shaquille O'Neal. Shaq is the big attraction, isn't he?
Yes, and Kevin Mawai also.
That's right. I didn't want to miss him.
Yeah,
probably a future Pro Football Hall of Famer.
Oh, I think no doubt. And but yes, having Shaquille there is going to be great for us. I mean, it's going to put us on the map a little bit, a lot more than normally. And you know, I mean, I think it's a great class even without Shaq. He's going to be there too. I mean, you know, getting him there is not always easy. You know, he's got a man with a lot of commitments, mm-hmm. as you could imagine, and so we're thrilled that he's going to be there. He's going to be there on Friday night for the grand opening and on Saturday for the induction.
You know Shaq's mom lives here in Baton Rouge?
I did not know
she
that.
Does.
Wow. Well, I'm sure she's going to be there, too. I know Dale Brown is going to present him, and so that should add another level of excitement.
It should, and of course Dale is one of the previous inductees, and through the years, we're talking, how many years has it been in existence?
Well, since 1958. So
right. 55 years.
We're talking a lot of people, 302 inductees over that span.
And Doug Ireland, who is the guy who runs the
right.
operation there, he told me once that only, I think, two people have failed to show in all those years, something like that.
Yeah, we do really well, and Doug does a great job of getting them here. And they coddle them, they call them, they constantly stay on them. We provide for guests that they want to bring, you know, lodging and meals and everything. And we put on a really good show. It's a golf tournament a lot of the inductees, and we get a lot of the past inductees like to come back for it. We get a lot of support that way, and that was. Those guys are one of the reasons we've been able to open our own museum. We've had a lot of contributions from from past inductees that want to keep it going and are thrilled to come back every year.
You've been with the Times-Picayune how long now, Jim?
29 years. I think I'm the second longest running sports writer on the staff right now. So,
29 years. My goodness. And you've seen the newspaper industry evolve. And now, of course, it's not only the Times-Picayune, but NOLA.com. What's your analysis of the newspaper war that's going on right now?
Well, when you said evolve, this is not even evolving. This, I mean, we've and it is interesting. I've got a lot of friends on both mm-hmm. sides. A lot of my friends are working for the Advocate now, It's interesting. It's never been like that. The Picayune has always been in New Orleans, and the Advocate's always been in Baton Rouge, and you know, seldom did the twains meet. But now it's a back and forth thing, and we're competing kind of on a different level now. We're trying to build a digital audience, and not just in New Orleans, but in Baton Rouge. And I think you saw, you know, we've hired J.R. Ball as our Baton Rouge news manager, and that's huge for us. I think he's going to do a fabulous job.
A guy who started in sports.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I competed against him when I first came onto the LSU beat. He was working with Tiger Rag, and he's very, very good. The thing I like about him is he provides an outside view, being from mm-hmm. Maryland, but he's also been in Baton Rouge long enough to know the inside, too. So it's going to be very interesting. A lot of things are yet to happen. I mean, the Advocate is still ramping up its New Orleans operation, and we're doing some things in Baton Rouge that people are starting to find out about.
Bliss asks, the Hall of Fame facility, is it on campus, the new?
No, it's in downtown Natchitoches on Front Street. It's a beautiful little place. It's on the Cane River, and it's a state-of-the-art building, and they built it tastefully to blend in with the older architecture there. Mm-hmm. And I think they've done a good job of that. It's a 27,000 square feet, 27,500 square feet, I should say, $23 million building, and it's going to have a lot of interactive exhibits. It's going to be a great little thing to visit, a great little jewel in North Louisiana.
Robert asks if Bill Russell is an inductee.
You know, it's funny. I'm glad I checked because I always assumed that he was. He's not. He was born
in
Monroe.
He's not in there.
But he's been gone.
That counts.
Well, you know, it's. I thought he was too. When I brought my magazine, my program with me, and I went back to check, and I kept looking for his name, but I think he left at such an early age. He didn't spend enough time here. And that's something that it's selecting for the Hall of Fame is difficult sometimes. You look at Shaquille, he spent 3 years in Louisiana, but he made such an impact. And then a guy like Tommy Hodson didn't go on to a great pro career, but he accomplished so much here. So you can't – there's no formula for it. You have to kind of look at what they've done.
I think if you're a Louisiana native, that counts. Bill Russell needs
to
be in there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's maybe something that we need to look at.
Well, he's won 11 NBA titles in 13 years and two NCAA titles in his last 2 years at the University of San Francisco. So William Felton Russell deserves to be in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Speaking of big men, though, Shaq going in, you already in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. I know these people are in. Elvin Hayes, Robert Parrish, Willis Reed, some great NBA big men. NBA most valuable players.
Right.
Robert Parrish, by the way, is second leading scorer. Not Robert Parrish, but Karl Malone, who's also in, I believe.
Isn't yes, Carl's he in. Is. He's recently.
Karl is the second leading scorer in the history of the NBA, behind Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah, well, we like to have there needs to be a solid Louisiana connection. A lot of those guys you mentioned either played, they played high school ball here and college ball. Willis Reed played at Grambling, and I know, and of course, Karl Malone played college and high school here too. So we kind of look at that angle. There are, like I said, lots of considerations, and we'd like there to be a strong Louisiana connection, or at least if there's a short time span, someone who's created a huge impact.
Well, next year we need to get Bill Russell in. He'll be 80 years old next year. Perfect time. I saw him at the NBA Finals. He's still a formidable guy. Towered over LeBron James. And a few years ago, before the Mannings won any Super Bowls, this would have been 2006, I was in Washington in Capitol Hill, and the elevator opens in one of the House offices, and out comes Peyton Manning and Archie Manning and Bill Russell, and all these staffers they're all around the Mannings like they're rock stars, and nobody's paying attention to Bill Russell. And I said to him, isn't this something? You got 13 more titles than those Mannings put together. And I'm the only guy shaking your hand, and it's quite an honor.
Yeah, there's fewer and fewer people that remember, you know, the older we go. And, you know, one of our inductees this year, Anna Cole, is really worth mentioning. It's a great story because she's like Louisiana's version of Babe Didrikson Zaharias, and actually was a contemporary and knew her. They were friends. They competed against each other. And she's a long-forgotten athlete, and she's in this year posthumously, of course.
Shanda Rubin.
I think there's probably no bigger tennis name in pro tennis than Shanda Rubin from Louisiana, that is. We have not produced a lot of tennis players, but I can't think of another of a bigger name.
And some others, too. You've got, as you said, you'd have quite a class even without Shaq. With him, it's probably the most celebrated class of all, but there any others? We mentioned Kevin Mawai.
Right, Kevin Mawai, a great stature off the field. Irvin Johnson, one of the best stories.
That's not magic.
No, not that Irvin Johnson, but the Irvin Johnson that bagged groceries in Baton Rouge when he was discovered by Tim Floyd, and just a great story.
I went to UNO.
Yes, and he's the first UNO athlete to be inducted.
Really?
I think Ron Maestri is in as a coach, but I think Irvin is the first UNO athlete to be inducted. Ronald Ardoin, 5,000 victories as a jockey, and he'd have had a lot more had he not been injured about 10 years ago and had to give up racing. But Skeets Tui, a longtime basketball coach at Newman High School, and Jimmy Jones, who played at Grambling and also was a star in the ABA, mm-hmm. for those that can remember the American Basketball Association.
And Tommy Hodson, who this year, along with his teammates from 1988, they won the SEC title that year, by the way, shared it with Auburn, the team they beat in the earthquake game of October 8, 1988, 7-6. You were there that night, weren't you, Jim?
I certainly was.
Yeah. And Tommy set all the records for LSU passers, and the career records are still there. He's by far the most prolific passer in the history of LSU, and he hasn't played in Tigertown now in 24 years.
Yeah, I find that amazing, especially given the fact that they've added a 12th game to the schedule, and
the bowl games now count as records.
That's true.
Too.
That's not true.
In Tommy's day.
That's right. And you have all these pass-oriented offenses where teams are throwing 40 and 50 times a game. Of course, LSU has never – I don't think they've ever had a passing offense where they threw 40 or 50 times a game, but they still throw the ball a lot more than in those days, and it's just amazing that Tommy's records have stood up so long.
Well, the pass that Tommy Hodson's most remembered for is the one to Eddie Fuller, 4th and 10 from the 11-yard line, inside 2 minutes. LSU was down 6-0, scored to beat Auburn, won 7-6. And it was an earthquake game because supposedly the seismograph a few yards away from the stadium went off, showing that the tremor was earthquake in dimensions. And there will be a recognition of that game September 21st when LSU plays Auburn in Tiger Stadium. But it was quite a night, a heart-stopping night. Jim, what do you think about people who pray in situations like that? They're down on their knees praying for their team to either score the touchdown or hold off the other guys. You think that works?
I don't know, but I'm telling you, that was quite a night. I remember walking down to the Auburn dressing room to get quotes, and I remember Tracy Rocker saying, "Well, Hodson's the glory boy now," and I've never forgotten
that. That's a great quote.
I gave that to Teddy Allen to use in his story, and it was just great. And that's probably, if it wasn't for Billy Cannon's Halloween run, that would be the signature play in LSU history. Just because of all the things around it. And you think about it, Auburn would have won the national championship that year probably without that loss. Not only did it, cost them a share of the title, and it's great, and I think we'll all be writing about that this fall.
Yeah, and Pat Dye was never the same as head coach, and I recall there in the Auburn locker room, Roger Sockman asked Pat Dye a question, and it wasn't a bad question. You don't want to ask yes or no questions, so he just said, "What happened on the play where LSU scored the touchdown?" And he was hoping to get a description from Pat Dye. Instead, he said, "Did you watch the game?"
Yeah, they don't take too kindly. Sometimes you have to ask a stupid question, like you said, to get an answer without just a yes or no. But coaches get a little tense, don't they?
And Pat Dye was an intense guy. I remember later that year in '88, since we're reminiscing, a few weeks later, Miami, Florida came to town. A relative monsoon, Miami won 44-3 over that team, the SEC champs from LSU in 1988. And Jimmy Johnson, who was head coach, his hair never moved through the monsoon.
Yeah, I don't think his hair ever moved in any game.
What's the most memorable game you've covered in all your years, 29 years?
Wow. Well, I wrote about this last year, too, because it was the 25th anniversary. And the game wasn't that big a deal, but when Burt Jones threw to Brad Davis, mm-hmm. to beat Ole Miss at the end, I don't believe I've ever been in a louder, scarier, more exciting environment. I just remember that the roar of the crowd when he caught it, it didn't stop, and it went all the way through the extra point. It was just, you have this feeling of being lifted up. And I was in Tiger Stadium for the Notre Dame game. I was there for the USC game. Those were really, really exciting ball games. The intensity, you could feel it throughout the game. But for a single moment in Tiger Stadium, I never experienced anything like that. I really, literally felt like I was being lifted up by the noise and the vibrations.
Burt Jones is in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. That was 1972. You were a kid then, weren't you?
Oh, I was 14-year-old with the season tickets to the CYO.
14 years old, and it remains, I think, it may have even eclipsed the Cannon Run. Certainly the most notable pass, followed closely by Hodson to Fuller. And Tommy Hodson will be honored this week, and hopefully we'll talk with him before the week's out on this program. Thank you, Jim Kleinpeter.
My pleasure.
Take care. We'll be back tomorrow. For Kevin, I'm Jim. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.